Welcome back to another episode of the Positive Persistence Podcast, where we bring you stories to inspire you and strategies to help you tap into your potential and become your best self. I'm your host, Ian Bowen, and today I'm joined by the one and only Bill Burke. Bill is a former Division I quarterback who played at Michigan State for the legendary Coach Saban. During his playing career, he contributed to victories in some of the biggest arenas in the country, including wins over in-state rival Michigan Wolverines, led by Tom Brady, and the top-ranked Buckeyes of Ohio State. His senior year, he helped the Spartans finish their season ranked number 7 in the country. Now, after his college career, Bill transitioned into a successful business career, leveraging the lessons he learned on the field. Today, he remains connected to sports and shares his experiences through public speaking and writing. He also released this amazing book, Victory Outside the Arena, which reflects on life after sports and the mindset needed to achieve success beyond athletics. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Ian. I am just so excited and fired up to be with you today. Really appreciate that intro and looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. There are so many things that I want to talk to you about, Bill, because as we mentioned before we started recording, like, I'm giddy because, you know, it's not every day you get to talk to someone who has played Division I sports on the biggest stage and been the quarterback of the football team and who has toppled some giants along the way. So this is a treat for me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm happy to share my knowledge and experience. And, you know, you mentioned some of those wins and some of those experiences. I had a lot of help along the way, you know, toppling some of those big programs. But the thing that I take away from it the most is beyond the experience is, you know, all the lessons that I learned. And so those have carried me throughout the rest of my life since I stopped playing. But also, I'm just so excited to be able to now flip the switch and impart a lot of that knowledge onto the people that I help. And I know you feel very similarly in your mission and what you're progressing with and chasing as well. So, I'm again, fired up to be here and, let's dive in and dig deep and maybe have some impact on the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So this book it's awesome. I love this book. There are so many things that are lessons in here. Now, clearly the book is pointed towards athletes, but I feel that anybody from any walk of life can really pull some great lessons from this book. But before we get in to the book, which we definitely will, I was hoping we could give our listeners and our viewers a little backstory on Bill Burke and how he became to be the starting quarterback for a Division I Big Ten football team.
Well, I appreciate that, you know, and I fell in love with the game. I was living in Western Pennsylvania at the time as a little kid. You know, I was probably 5 years old. My family is from this little town on the Monongahela River south of Pittsburgh. And I'm dating myself here, but this was the late 70s and early 80s. The Steelers were everything, right? They were winning all the Super Bowls and Steel Curtain had all these Hall of Famers. And I just, for whatever reason, you know, there wasn't athletics in my family. My parents didn't play anything. Just fell in love with the game and loved just the physicality of it. I remember just begging my parents to want to play organized football. It wasn't offered at such a young age, but once we moved across the border into Northeast Ohio, this is about when I was 8 years old, it was available. And so, of course, I went out to practice and joined the team and played every year up through middle school and high school, discovered that I had some height and some talent to throw the football, got an opportunity to play, excelled, long story short. Landed in East Lansing, Michigan, you know, through many visits to different schools. And, you know, I'd run to the mailbox in high school after school every day to see, you know, what letters were in there and what helmet was on the outside of the envelopes, you know, because I was just so excited to see that those logos and be a fan of those teams and think about and dream about, you know, playing in those stadiums and playing really the game that I had watched on TV every Saturday. You know, I wanted to be in that arena. And so I was lucky enough, you know, when it all came to a head after my senior year, I was lucky enough to be invited to play at Michigan State by Nick Saban, who had just gotten the job at Michigan State. He was coming from the NFL and offered me a scholarship. And, you know, that's where I went. And I tell people who ask me why Michigan State, well, number one, I didn't have what some kids have these days where they've got offers from every major college in the country. I didn't have that. But I did have a couple of big time offers. And once I got to Michigan State and took a visit, it was just the picture of what I had always pictured college to be. There's a river that runs through it. It felt, you know, warm and welcoming. And, you know, of course, it was a big school and with a lot of big athletic programs. And of course, I wanted to be associated with a coach who had just come from the National Football League, because ultimately that was my goal, to get all the way up there at the very top of the profession, so to speak. So, had a lot of great experiences at Michigan State. I was lucky enough to work my way into the starting lineup. And I feel lucky to do that because there are so many guys at all positions. And a lot of people don't realize this in major college football. A lot of big time high school recruits that show up there and have tons of talent. But there are so many different factors that come into play in terms of getting a guy or getting yourself as a player onto the actual field into a game. You know, that doesn't just happen because you had a great high school career. There's injuries. There's, you know, your work ethic. There's your ability to process things mentally, because if you don't know what to do when you're on the field, the coaches can't put you out there, even if you're the most gifted guy physically. So I found my edge and my niche, and, you know, through some things that probably weren't even in my control, I was able to work my way into the starting lineup, and had some great experiences. Like you mentioned, we upset Ohio State when they were number one in the country at their house, beat Tom Brady in Michigan, and were able to beat some other really top tier programs. And I just feel fortunate to have had such great experiences that I can now reflect back on, you know, with my teammates. And I just had a reunion, you know, a couple months ago, and we just tell stories, you know, from the playing days. And it's not even about the touchdowns or the games, you know, it's just about the little things, having fun in the locker room, or, you know, the late season practices in the dark in November, you know, just with the snow falling, or, you know, whatever it is. Those are the things that I really take away from me and will always remember.
Yeah, those are some, have to be some golden memories for you, I would imagine.
Yes.
Now, for our listeners and our viewers who may not know your story or have not read your book, you touched on a little bit that your goal was to get to the NFL. Can you tell us what happened after your senior year at Michigan State?
Yeah, like everybody else, you know, I wanted to go to the next level, wanted to get paid, you know, as a professional to do what I love to do and what I had always loved to do. I had a good senior season. I'd say my junior season might have been a little better statistically personally, but we had a much better season as a team my senior year. Like you mentioned, we finished number 7 in the country. Got invited to the NFL Combine, went through that whole process, but unfortunately was not drafted in the NFL draft in 2000. So what happens after that? You try and get into a camp as a free agent, which I did with the New York Giants. They were all set, basically. I had some experience at the quarterback position, so was not retained or didn't make the team, was let go in the late part of the preseason that year. And coincidentally, the Giants actually went on that season to make it to the Super Bowl. So had I made the team, it would have been a fun ride to experience that as well. But, you know, we'll let that one just kind of leave that one in the past.
Right, sure.
But no, it was a lot of fun. It was a great experience. And I had a couple more tryouts after that and just tried to hang on to the dream as long as I could. But, you know, at some point you got to have the perspective that it might be time to move on. And every athlete, I think, knows that their time will one day come where they can't play that game anymore. And I think football is particularly difficult because you can't just go out like golf or tennis and play by yourself, you know, forever. You know, it's not something that you can do forever. It's a very unique sport in that regard. So it was very difficult. And, you know, I, like a lot of other athletes, struggled with the transition because that's all I had ever known. It was like, that was my identity. That's where I got my confidence from. That's where a lot of people were attracted to me and patting me on the back and reinforcing this identity that I had as Bill, the football player, the athlete. So it was tough. It was tough to figure out, you know, who I was and what I really wanted, because I had never had to answer those questions before. I had always known since I was very little. So, I began on this journey, down this dark path that, was filled with a lot of uncertainty that I'm still on right now, because I think as I'm discovering here in my 40s, you know, that journey never ends. You know, I'm passionate about personal development and constantly improving and growing and maximizing my full potential as a human being. I think a lot of athletes, you know, want to replace their athletic career with some other business or professional career. And what I've realized and learned is that that's just, you know, your career, whatever it is, that's just one small part of your entire existence, right? I mean, it takes up a lot of our time and, you know, we're all wrapped up in what we do, but I think there's so much more to it than that. And it's, you know, for me, it's a question of how am I showing up in my professional life, but also how am I showing up in my personal life with my family as a leader? So those are all things that I'm continuing to work on as I evolve and grow each and every day.
And that that experience that you just described, I would imagine, is part of the impetus for you writing this book.
Mm-hmm.
Because the full title is Victory Outside the Arena, How Athletes Can Go From Isolated to Inspired Once the Applause Begin to Fade. And again, one of the reasons that I really like this book is I think that idea of having to maybe reinvent yourself or having to move into an area of your life where your former identity is left behind is difficult. And I feel that there's so many people out there that find themselves in that position. Well, whether it's in sports, and it could be, you know, a high school kid that's got an injury that he's no longer going to be able to play football or whatever sport it is, or it could be a middle-aged, you know, 35, 40-year-old mom who finds herself that she has been raising three kids and has given them all of her time. And now she's like, how did I get here? I don't have the body that I want. Mm-hmm. I don't have the career that I want. All my identity is mom and I want me back. You know, and there's frameworks and tips and tactics in this book that I think lend themselves to those people as well that can help them move into the next best version of themselves. And if you don't mind, I want to dive into this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so just in the beginning pages, like in the intro, page 4 and 5, this stuck out to me right away. And this little passage that you wrote: I wasn't actively putting in the necessary time and work to uncover why I couldn't seem to unstick myself and start moving in the direction of fulfillment. I was waiting for someone or something to point me in the right direction. Instead of being an active participant in discovering the full scope of my potential, I was watching from the sidelines. And clearly, this is after you had not made the Giants team. So where were you mentally at that time?
I was completely lost. Like I said, there was no, I hadn't come to the realization yet that, you know, my future, my responsibility was up to me, because I had never had to address that before. I never had to figure anything out, because I was on a track from the time I was very little, and I knew what I wanted. I knew how to get it. I knew what direction and what path I had to take. But it's really difficult when you know what you want, you're doing all the right things, you're working as hard as you can, you're around the right people, you're around the right environment, but somebody tells you at some point, hey, you can't be on the team, and the door just closes on that, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's this exclusive club that you want to be a part of, and they're not taking any new members, you know, and they certainly don't want you. So that's a tough thing to swallow, especially when you're in your early 20s. It's not like, hey, I want to create a business and it's possible for me, and I just have to be patient and take the necessary steps to get there. This is an exclusive place where only a certain number of people have ever been allowed into that club. And, you know, I knew that that's what I wanted, but there's no way possible that I could have gotten it or been accepted into that club. So where do you go from there? You know, I was completely lost. I hadn't even asked myself what I wanted beyond football. That's not something or an idea or a thought I ever wanted to entertain. And I know we had speakers when I was in college, and everybody said, you got to prepare for the next step and you got to have a plan B and all that. I didn't want any part of that. I didn't want to spend any time or any energy thinking about a plan B. I knew what I wanted, you know, and how many people go through their entire adult lives and still don't know what they want? I was somebody who at 5 years old knew what I wanted, and I didn't achieve it because it just wasn't possible for me. So that was a really tough pill to swallow. So mentally, man, I mean, I was completely in the dark. I had no idea which direction to go or what to do, because when you're an athlete at that high level in college, there's this huge support team around you, and they're all trying to push you and help you and support you for what you need to do on Saturday afternoons in the stadium. But once you're done and your eligibility is gone, all those resources, for the most part, dissipate and evaporate. And so you're left to try and figure it out on your own. And again, that's a very difficult struggle for a lot of athletes.
Right. So this is a major setback for you, to put it plainly. And you have to figure out, yeah, what am I going to do now?
Yeah, it was extremely difficult. And again, you know, how many people don't ever ask themselves, what do I really want? And I certainly wasn't asking myself at that point. I had no idea what I wanted. I was, you know, 23 years old. And I didn't even know what my problem was, to be totally honest with you. You know, I thought, well, if I find a career that is as exciting or fulfilling as my athletic career would be, then I'll be all set. And of course, that never happened, because it's very difficult to duplicate the fulfillment, the years invested, the time invested in this love, this passion, and then go be able to do that thing on a stage in front of 75,000 screaming fans every Saturday. That's just impossible. It doesn't exist. So right. A lot of missteps, a lot of setbacks, a lot of, you know, I wouldn't call it depression, but, you know, a lot of time spent not feeling great about myself, because I didn't have this identity that every human being needs to kind of fill themselves up with confidence and self-worth and all that type of stuff. So a lot of ups and downs for me, mostly downs, at least in that initial time. But again, I think, you know, my perspective in the book is that, and it took me a lot of years to figure this out, but, you know, that type of an athletic career is really not the end, which I felt like it was for a lot of years. You know, it's really the beginning. You know, it's really a gift. It's really a training ground. And I look at it as an internship of sorts now. I didn't then, but man, what an apprenticeship to be able to prepare for later in life. And I think, you know, the older you get and the more perspective and time that you have, the more value that you see in some of those past experiences. And I'm, even to this day, I'm discovering new things that I loved about that part of my life that I never have thought of until just now. I mean, you know, being a kid and being a fan and watching those games on TV, and even the announcers, listening to those announcers call those games of my heroes. And then, you know, I didn't realize it at the time. I took it for granted, like a lot of other things. But now, just recently, I'm like, man, how cool was it to hear, you know, guys like Keith Jackson or Brent Musburger or Kirk Herbstreit or whoever call my name. Yeah. You know, that's a cool little thing that I never really considered until just recently. So I'm uncovering all these little hidden gems about, you know, that experience, what it taught me, and how fulfilling and how really blessed I was to go through that. Because, I mean, we could do a whole day on just, you know, what I've learned from it and the good fortune I had being around a guy like Nick Saban, who, man, his voice continues to reverberate in my head. And now I'm passing on a lot of those lessons to my own kids who are involved in sports. So how cool is that? Mm-hmm. You know, I got to be around and learn from, and I say it every time I'm asked, but he's one of the top CEOs in the country across any industry, not just in the game of sports or the game of football. So, man, I have a different perspective. I'm really big on that. And I think if I would impart one thing on a young former athlete, it's, you know, have some perspective, because, you know, when you shift how you look at something, it can really determine your attitude going forward.
Absolutely. And that's an interesting way for you to look back at those experiences and really frame up that as, you know, setbacks are really nothing but setups for comebacks, depending on the lens that you choose to look through.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. There's another part in this book, consequently on the very next page, that a couple of these phrases hit me sideways and kind of sunk in. And it's talking about the longer you delay, the more you avoid the big issues in your life, the greater the chance that you'll drift towards an ordinary life. You'll get what you are willing to accept. Most of our suffering comes from avoidance. Embrace the pain, but refuse to tolerate it. That you'll get what you are willing to accept. I love that. And I was hoping you could kind of unpack the idea behind that sentence.
Yeah, again, you know, those types of concepts came many years later after my career ended, but it just makes me think of Nick Saban and the impact that he's had on my life. The whole framework for the book, which maybe we'll get into, was just a quick throwaway story or lesson from Nick in one of the team meetings. And I start the book with that introduction and where all that came from. And, you know, he talked about taking on the number one team in the country, Ohio State, and we were 28-point underdogs, I believe. We're going to play at their house. They were undefeated. Everybody had said they're winning the national title. They're the best team in the country. So for us, we were very average, and it was a very daunting, overwhelming thought to go down there and beat this juggernaut of a football team. So he said, you know, how long does a football play last? 6 seconds. Can you stick your hand in the fire for those 6 seconds? Forget about the scoreboard and what the end result is going to be. Can you just stick your hand in the fire, endure that pain, accept it, embrace the discomfort, understand that that play has a life of its own, and just that's all that matters at that moment is just those 6 seconds, and then reset between plays and then do it again and just chop it down into all those little 6 second segments. And that's exactly what we did. And I think that was a huge reason why we came out of that game as winners, as victorious. And we, as the headline said on the paper the next day, we shocked the world because we took that approach. We embraced that discomfort. Yep. When you stick your hand in the fire, you're probably going to get some scars. It's going to be painful. It's not going to be fun. It's going to be uncomfortable. But if you accept that and almost welcome that and smile at the thought of that, man, what a tremendous mindset shift that gives you in order to attack forward and attack your goals and attack the challenge of whatever is in front of you.
Yeah. So it's very similar, I guess, in thinking about the program that we just both went through with Ben Newman, talking about that neutral mindset in terms of expecting your journey to be difficult. And like you said, almost smiling at it because you know it's coming, but you're ready for it. And then no matter what, whether it's a positive response or a negative response, doesn't matter because you continue to do what you need to do moving forward. You're unfrappable.
Yes, exactly. And another phrase that Coach Saban always said was outcomes are distractions, and they really are. When you take your mind off of what you need to do and you're focused on the end result, you know, you're basically holding yourself back. So we took the right approach, I believe, and of course made some mistakes along the way and wasn't able to sustain that success over time that season. But, you know, we learned a very valuable lesson, and I think Coach Saban did as well. He learned that that approach really works, and that began his whole famous process of what he takes his teams through, and it led him to win 7 national titles at other schools. So, man, just to be able to have that experience and see it play out in real time and see the results of that type of a mental approach was something that I'll never forget.
Amazing. But yeah, so let's talk about the FIRE framework. If you can break it down for us, what does FIRE stand for?
Yeah, I think it's a good practical way to attack any challenge. It's you know, when you have a problem in front of you, and I spelled out the FIRE framework as a result of the story that I just told from Coach Saban, mm-hmm. but first is fierce knowledge, and I attach a powerful descriptor in front of every one of these concepts because I think emotions are really important when you're talking about attacking your goals and your challenges. So fierce knowledge is not just a casual passive knowledge about something. It's really wanting to know the ins and outs of everything that you're about to embark on before you even start. Doesn't mean you get paralyzed with consuming information. It just means you are really adamant and aggressive about figuring out what you need to know to move forward. So that's fierce knowledge. That's the F. The second one is inspired intention. After you know the knowledge, you've got to set an intention. And you can call it a goal, you can call it whatever you want, but you have to intend to attack that goal, that challenge, that objective. Mm-hmm. The third thing, of course, is relentless action. You know, once you set the intention, you got to take action, but you got to be relentless. You can't just take action once in a while or when you feel like it. It's got to be relentless. Coach Saban used that word all the time, and many other coaches use it as well. I mean, you just have to convey to your opponent, whoever that is, and maybe it's yourself, that it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down, you are never going to stop getting back up. And if you can convince yourself and understand that that's just the type of person that you are, you're unstoppable. It's just a matter of time before you get that objective. And then lastly is epic focus. Once you are taking action, you got to maintain that focus on it. And the reason I call it epic is because in this circumstance, epic, I'm using it as an adjective, but an epic as a noun is a story with a hero. And so if you take that mindset of you're the hero of your own story and you are going to not quit, not be denied, regardless of the circumstances, if you look at yourself that way, man, what a great narrative you are really creating for yourself, for your family, for your business, and for your life ultimately.
Yeah, and the way that you describe that, Bill, I think, again, it is so usable for so many people in so many different walks of life. Again, not just athletes, it could be anybody, to understand how you can become the hero of your own story. That's awesome. And when you talk about, you know, attacking the next phase in life, so in this book and in your experience for athletes, you talk about you need to begin to understand who you are, not just who you were. And that line really stuck out to me because shortly after my surgery, which was a pivotal time in my life where I had spinal cord surgery, paralyzed me from the chest down, all I wanted to do was get back to the person that I was before, post or pre-surgery, get back to 100% recovery. And as the years ticked by, I had to realize that was never going to be the case. Like, I was never going to be the person that I was before the surgery. And I had to be okay with that. But then I learned to not just be okay with knowing that I was never going to be who I was before, but that I had the opportunity to be 100% of the person that I am now. And that really flipped my mindset into the woe is me of, man, I'm never going to be who I was, to, well, I'm going to be 100% of who I am now, which totally opens up the doors to being able to step into whatever goals you have set for yourself now, being able to move forward and not being held back with that anchor. Or speaking of the anchor, having that dream, like you talk about in the book, and the dream being your anchor, that thing that always holds you on the path to moving forward when things are maybe not going your way. Life isn't treating you as you want to be treated. Man, I could go on all these different quotes from your book, Bill, but I want to stay on track here. Because I want to talk about the structured checklist that you have in the book. Because I think that this is a great tool or pattern, if you will, to have in place in your life so you can set yourself up for success. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that structured checklist and how you use it.
Yeah. Athletes specifically, and I know I was the same way, you know, every minute of your day is planned out for you. You're told when to eat and when to practice and when to be at the building and when you get to sleep, when to study, all that good stuff. So when that goes away, you know, it was really difficult to kind of coach yourself and figure out for yourself, you know, what you need to be doing and what your day would look like and should look like, so you're accomplishing things and, you know, moving the needle. So, you know, I think it's very important for a lot of people, not just former athletes, to kind of structure their day so they're not living their life on accident. You know, they're living on purpose. And
yes,
that can be a struggle for a lot of people, athletes, non-athletes. So I think, you know, my big thing has always been, you know, in order to set yourself up for success tomorrow, you got to start that today. You know, you got to be thinking about tomorrow today. You got to plan tomorrow today. So that can be something as little as, hey, if I know I'm working out tomorrow at 7 a.m., I'm getting my gear ready. I'm getting everything set up so I can hit the ground running when I wake up. It's not wake up, figure out what the day looks like, then start to move in the direction of getting things ready. You know, you've already lost a couple hours if you're starting that way. So, I think, you know, there's so many little things that you can do. And of course, you've got to find what works best for you. But I think that structuring your day ahead of time is number one. You've got to plan the night before and just spend a little time. Doesn't have to take an hour. But of course, if you're spending 10 or 15 minutes just to even visually think about what the next day will look like, even if you're not writing it all down, I think that's a huge first step.
I'm going to read through what you have listed in here in the checklist, and it's plan tomorrow, the night before, like you just mentioned. Use a calendar or planner. Determine your three most important tasks for the day. Time box, which I want to come back to. Have a morning routine. Set an alarm. Decide how you will handle variables, interruptions, and celebrate your wins. Now, the question is, if you had to pick one of those things, only one, what would be the most important, you think, from that checklist?
Well, I'm just going to speak from my own personal experience, and I'm still struggling with this now, but it is decide how you are going to handle distractions and interruptions. That is really difficult for me because there's always so much coming at me all day long. You've got emails popping up. If I get on social media to post something, I'm distracted by all the other people on there. And of course, 10 minutes goes by and I forgot why right. I even got on there in the first place. Yeah. So, you really got to set up your environment for success. So if you're getting distracted, you're losing time. And I constantly fight that battle. But I think it's really important because, going back to one of the other things that you mentioned was identifying the three most important things that you can do. Sometimes I make a list that's entirely too long and it's unrealistic to get 12 things done in a day, 12 big things. Yeah. So keeping that list to a small number and then the most important things within those numbers, I think is really important. That way, you're not getting so distracted by all these other things that you could do, but probably shouldn't be doing at the moment.
Yeah. That I think is a great way to help you stay focused on the things that you need to do to move yourself forward. Absolutely. Let's go back to time box. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, time boxing is, if you identify a task and you say, I'm going to work on that task from 10 a.m. till noon, and you give yourself 2 hours, and you work through it, and when 12 o'clock rolls around, you haven't completed that task. You don't continue doing that task because that's going to push into the next task, which is going to push everything off track. So what you do is you only give yourself time, that amount of time for that particular item. And if you don't get it all done, then you move the rest of it to another place on your calendar in the future. But it really it keeps boundaries and perimeters around your time. And you have to understand, again, because if you don't get it done, you're becoming distracted by the overspill of that task into other things that might be just as equally important. So it's a discipline. And again, it's not, don't expect yourself to be perfect when you're first starting out, but it's a practice like anything else. And it's a muscle that you have to build.
That is that's a great productivity tip for sure. I want to pivot to another quote from your book that when I read it, I was like, in one of my heads, like, what? But it is, you asked, is failure an option? And then you stated, on the road to maximizing your potential, it better be. So can you explain that to us of why the failure better be a part of becoming the best version of yourself?
Yeah, failure is the path to success. Tell me one person that has not failed on their way to success. I mean, you can't do it. So I think I've always had a problem with, to a degree, perfectionism. I want to be really good or perfect at something the first time I try it, which is very unrealistic, of course. And so you've got to almost force yourself into failure. You've got to try new things. You've got to have the courage to step out there and fail at something or look stupid at something. I think, you got to understand, again, and this comes back to mindset, that's just part of the process. If you really want, if you've identified what you really want and you really want it bad and you want to go after it, you got to expect the adversity. You've got to expect the failures and the setbacks, and you've got to stick your hand in the fire to get that thing that you ultimately want. And thankfully, I learned that through my athletic career because if I didn't have that experience, I don't know that I would have moved forward as quickly as I have, because of my own, DNA and my own inherent personality of, wanting to be really good at something from the very beginning. You've got to be willing to put yourself out there and step into things that are uncomfortable. And that's part of what you mentioned earlier, reinventing yourself. You've got to after your tremendous battle with the adversity that you had to figure out how to step into this new environment and how to be uncomfortable and be a different person. And I think if you're embracing that, then you truly have that growth mindset that's going to allow you to exponentially grow in the direction of whatever you're trying to accomplish. But if you're not willing to do that, if you are hiding or staying comfortable in where you currently are or who you currently are, you're not going to ultimately reach those dreams.
Right. And you're ultimately not going to be tapping into what you phrase as your unfair advantage. So let's talk about that, because that's a big part of your book as well.
Yeah, I love that concept, because I think every single person on the planet has one, you know, and we don't realize it. That's the shame of it. You know, if we don't take time to explore what our own gifts are, even though we might take them for granted, even if you don't know what they are and don't think that you have any, seek out the advice of people that are close to you. They know more than you do about you sometimes. You know, it's hard to, as I heard this great quote, and I love it, it's hard to read the label when you're inside the bottle. So, you know, you might have to ask somebody that's close to you, hey, what am I best at? What am I talented at? What do people value me for? And so, you know, I really love the idea, the concept of talking about fingerprints as well. You know, we all have these unique fingerprints on our fingertips. We never look at our hands. We don't know what's really there because they're kind of tough to see. And I think from the time we were all kids, we learned that no two fingerprints are exactly alike. There's 8 billion people on the planet and nobody has your fingerprints. But the really cool part of this whole story is I've learned that in order to form those fingerprints when we're still inside the womb, we have to struggle to a degree. You know, we've got to move our bodies around. You know, the fetus is moving around, jockeying for position, trying to stretch its limbs and figure things out even before they come into the world. So how cool is that, that you and me and everybody else on the planet has this very unique 1 in 8 billion set of fingerprints, and we had to struggle for that uniqueness. So it shouldn't come as any surprise. I think it should actually be comforting that now we're in the real world and we're trying to chase our goals and our dreams. Struggle is just a part of the deal. And we kind of signed up for that, you know, before we even entered the world and took our first breath.
I just found that phrase, your unfair advantage, to be intriguing, because you're right. We do have what nobody else has, because nobody else is us. Like, we are unique individuals who all have, if you want to call it an unfair advantage, or if you want to call it a superpower, but we have a skill or some inherent set of maybe wisdom or abilities that nobody else has. But you're right. We don't tap into that. We don't really allow ourselves to access that unbelievable uniqueness and use it to really be able to pull ourselves into our potential. And that needs to be something that we shine a light on a lot more often, I think.
100%. I mean, you're the perfect example of that. You know, paralysis and now you're running marathons. I mean, that's probably just one of your unfair advantages. And not only have you went through those experiences to catapult your own personal development, but man, how many people can you inspire and help because of that experience? I mean, that's a huge unfair advantage. People don't know what that's like to go through that. I mean, the mental gymnastics that you probably had to endure as you were recovering is unbelievable. So everybody's got something like that that they can use, if not just for themselves, but to impact those around them. So I encourage everybody to think about that, because sometimes, again, you know, we take so much for granted. We take our gifts for granted, or we have these talents that we're not even utilizing because we don't even realize that they're gifts or talents. You know, nobody's ever said, hey, you know, you really have a gift. And sometimes that's all it takes is one other person saying, hey, I believe in you and you've got this thing and it's your responsibility now to figure out how to use it.
Yes, the power of giving somebody else some significance, it can be so amazing. That's exactly right. You talk about Viktor Frankl a lot in your book, and I wanted to highlight the term of existential vacuum, which in the book you describe as the feeling of emptiness. The sense that something should be happening, but isn't. It's a feeling that life could and should be more exciting, more fun, and more rewarding, but it isn't. And I think that there are so many people that find themselves in this position, kind of what we touched on earlier in the conversation, in where they are on this path, and all of a sudden that path comes to an abrupt end. Or they find themselves on the path where they don't want to be anymore, and they feel empty, and they don't know how to move forward. What would be, utilizing the framework that you put in your book, what would you say to somebody who is in that position, who is, finds themselves stuck in this existential vacuum of what's the next thing that they should be doing to be able to move forward out of that spot?
Well, I think the word that comes to mind is awareness. You know, you've got to understand why you're feeling what you're feeling. Number one, reflect on it a little bit. But I also love the fact that something that I learned from Frankl when I was doing research for my book, and something that is really so paramount to the lessons in his book, which is Man's Search for Meaning, is this idea that what man needs is not, and women need, is not a tensionless state. We all think we want this blissful happiness state where nothing is missing and we don't want for anything. But I think what I learned from Frankl is that tension is actually a very good thing. That means you're winning. You're putting pressure on yourself to a degree to maximize that full potential. So we don't need a tensionless state where we're just completely relaxed all the time. What we need is a worthy goal, something to chase, something that matches our potential, you know, so we're not thinking too small or living too small.
Yeah.
And I think when we discover that, we actually understand that that tension, that restlessness that we're feeling inside is actually a driver. It's the fuel for, you know, what type of life we ultimately will end up living, you know, when it's all said and done. And number one is just, again, you know, shifting our attitude and our perspective. You know, that emptiness that we feel, it might be a good thing. It's not maybe productive to always just be in this completely relaxed state where, you know, we're completely blissful and happy. That's not really the goal, I think. I think it's to have an impact and really to continually chase our own potential. And that changes. I think that goalpost changes and moves throughout our life. And that's the exciting part. Because if we knew from the very beginning, like I thought I did from 5 years old, and that was just my entire life, I mean, yeah, there would have been a lot of exciting times and experiences, but, you know, I wouldn't have been forced to evolve and change and think about who I am and answer those really tough life questions, because I would have had it figured out from age five. You know, I don't think that's what life is all about. We're right. Evolving creatures, and, you know, hopefully we have the intention of growing and discovering new parts of ourselves and new avenues in terms of what we are capable of in our lives.
And in order to do that, we have to, as you mentioned, step forward and basically push ourselves towards the resistance. We can't have that tensionless state, like you said, where everything is bliss. There's going to be some suck that you have to endure. And as you referenced, have the mindset of the buffalo and not the cow, right? As the storm comes, be the buffalo who heads into the storm instead of being the cow that heads in the opposite direction and then has to endure the storm longer.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that story. You know, it's, we all want to be the cow, right? We all want to just kind of, let me avoid this discomfort. Let me just kind of start trying to run away from it. But like you mentioned, what you end up doing is you're in the storm longer. You know, you have to suffer longer, suffer more. And I love that the buffalo that just turns and runs right into the storm and says, I'm getting this over with because I'm going to go back to my life and I'm going to power through this because it doesn't make sense for me to suffer any longer than I have to. So, and that's my whole thing with sticking your hand in the fire, right? Yeah, you're going to get wet and, you know, cold, and it's going to hurt and all that good stuff, but it's going to ultimately be the best decision for you. So, I try and take that mentality daily. I'm not perfect at it. Certainly fail from time to time, but, I think over time what you do is, like anything else, like in sports, you start to build up that muscle and it becomes just who you are. And without looking at the ultimate goal, because it's very easy to say, hey, I have this dream and I'm not there yet. But when you really look back as if somebody was watching you in a TV show or a movie, how much further are you today than you were a week ago or a year ago? I mean, and it's probably become so much a part of your new or the new version of yourself that you don't even realize all the little wins that you've been stacking over the past several weeks or years, months. So you've got to give yourself credit for some of those wins as well.
Yeah. And that is so key that I think that is something that people really need to understand, is that you have to look back sometimes and you have to see how far you have come in order to feel good about where you are and stack those wins on top of each other. And that creates momentum. And now you're excited about where you're going to go, because all the things that you accomplished already up to this point. Which brings me to another phrase in your book, which I thought was very poignant. And it's, you give this example, you set the scene of when we're at a party or a gathering, you know, and you meet somebody for the first time and you're having small talk and you eventually always ask the question, what do you do? Right? But instead, turning that question into, what are you becoming? And I thought that that blew my mind for a minute to think about that. And when we think about, and we turn that to ourselves, and we are in a position of where we're stuck or we don't know what we should be doing next, or things aren't going the way that we want them to, and we intrinsically think, what should I do now? But instead, having that thought process turn into, what could I become now? That is such a powerful statement, as opposed to the latter being so powerless.
Yeah, we talked about it in the beginning. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, this idea that our career is what defines us. And I think that's just the wrong mentality to take. And I've discovered that, you know, over the course of my journey. But, you know, it's more about, who could you become as a person? You know, what type of person are you becoming versus what are you doing? We're going to do lots of things. You do lots of things. I do lots of things. The things that I'm doing now might not be the things that I'm doing a year from now. So you really got to understand and ask yourself that question. What type of person do I want to become? And do I want to be the type of person that is disciplined? Do I want to be the type of person that is giving to the people around me? You know, whatever your thing is, you know, who do you want to become? And focus on those values and practicing those techniques to become that person. And fill yourself up with the right education, podcasts like this one, books, or get around the right people that you want to be more like. You know, if you want to be a successful business owner, then get around some successful business owners. You know, who do you want to become? That's really the more important question than what should I do? I mean, there's a million things that I could do right after we get done with this conversation, and none of them are going to have an influence on the type of person that I want to become. You know, between here and, you know, my refrigerator, man, I'm going to get distracted 100 times with things that, you know, I could do. My wife probably has 10 projects for me between here and there. You know, who do I want to become? And maybe there's a lesson in there too. Maybe I do one of the projects for her because I want to be the type of person that is helpful and somebody can rely on me. But again, I think the point is, you know, we've got to understand, who do we really want to become? Because it's easy to fall into traps, you know, of what other people think we should do or who they think we should become. So again, it goes back to just being intentional about, you know, really, and that's not easy to do because we've got all these outside influences. We got family and friends who think we should do this, and maybe we want to just give in to their expectations, but we really got to stay stoic, I think, in terms of who we want to become and fight against the outside pressures to become somebody else.
Yeah. And that speaks directly to, you know, something else that you talk about, is that victory is based on internal decisions, not external conditions. And you're exactly right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, we again, you know, we've got so much. We got this storm swirling around like the cows and the buffaloes. You know, there's always clouds storming and rain falling and all these different things coming at us continuously. And then you throw family into the mix. You've got kids, you know, I got a couple teenagers who are always on the go and needing my help as well. I mean, there's a million things to be distracted by. So you've got to make some really important decisions. If you ultimately want to get to the end of your life and be fulfilled and leave a legacy and say, I left it all on the field. You know, the time is something that I really struggle with as well. About 10 years ago, not recently, but 10 years ago, discovered that I had a health issue as well. So that really changes your perspective on how much time you may or may not have to do all the things that you want to do. And, you know, having a sense of urgency is part of that equation as well. You know, we're not promised an infinite amount of time in our life. So if you've got big dreams and big ambitions, you better get started.
Right. Because time waits for no one, as they
That's
say.
Right.
You also talk about affirmations and visualizations as part of your success. Can you kind of walk us through some of the things that you do or maybe put into practice in those realms?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by how the mind works and why we all do what we do. And, you know, we're on a computer right now, right? That computer's got programming, software, and hardware. And I think it's just fascinating that we have the power and the agency to program our own minds and essentially create the futures that we want by what we think about and say today. And so I've discovered that several years ago, and that's part of my morning routine. I think the phrase I am is very important. I am the type of person that blank, whatever your thing is, or I am successful, or I am giving, or whatever your affirmation is. I think those are very powerful to program your subconscious. You know, our subconscious runs, I think, 85% of our day, you know, without us even thinking about it. We're just in routines and habits. And so whatever we program our mind with, that's going to become our reality an hour from now, tomorrow, next week. So that's a little bit eye-opening to somebody who may have never heard that. But it's also very exciting to me because we can create whatever we want to create with our thoughts, but it takes practice and it takes a habit. It takes intention and it takes focus. So I go through that every morning. Gratitude is number one. Affirmations are number two. And then visualizing either how I want the day to go or visualizing the dreams that I have for myself in the future. Because I think that, you know, when we can see something happening in the future, but we can feel it now, that gives us a much better chance to actually have that come into fruition in a future. So I'm a big believer in all of those things and the power of the mind and using it to our advantage. And if you can develop that muscle, that can become another part of your unfair advantage is using your mind and understanding that you can be intentional, live your life on purpose and create tomorrow today.
Absolutely. And have life happen for you, not just to you.
Right.
Yeah. And then there's another, speaking of life, there's another phrase that you have in here that really turned my mind upside down. And it was the simple question of, what does life expect from you? Because usually we frame it the other way. Like, what do we expect from life? What should I be getting out of life? But what does life expect from you? I don't know how to answer that question, but it is a poignant one, and it's very interesting for me to ponder that, because that really, again, that turns the responsibility back on you to make sure that you are doing what you need to do to move in the right direction, to propel yourself forward against the resistance, against the rain, be the buffalo, go head on into the storm to figure out how you can step into the next best version of yourself.
Yeah, you know, that really hit me hard too when I read it, and that comes from Frankl again. You know, his book had a really big impact on me. And that so much of my younger days when I wasn't fulfilled because I had fallen short of my dream of playing in the National Football League, I had been thinking about, you know, myself. I was to a degree feeling sorry for myself. Like I said, I was feeling lost. And I had all these expectations, you know, that I felt like a promise had been broken to me, you know, by the universe. You know, I was supposed to be this thing. And why wasn't I this thing? And why did I fall short? I had all these questions. I was asking all these questions. And when I read that in his book, you know, I said, wow, you know, maybe the universe is standing there with its arms crossed, waiting for me to answer the questions, waiting for me to figure it out, waiting for me to take some action. And so I really believe that wholeheartedly, and it's changed my whole life, really. It's changed my perspective. You know, there's an expectation for me. You know, we mentioned the uniqueness that we all have, and I'm 1 in 8 billion, but man, what a responsibility it is to fulfill that uniqueness. You know, I've got to listen and pay attention to those questions that I'm being asked. And of course, you don't always know what those are, but it's your job, I think, to go out there and pursue the answers. And when you really look at it like that, you don't want to sit around. You know, you want to get up and take some action and figure it out, because time, the clock is ticking, as we talked about. But man, you know, I feel an intense responsibility to fulfill my potential, because what a waste to not fulfill it if I've been given these gifts. And maybe I don't know exactly what they are. Maybe I need some help. Maybe I need a team or some assistance. But I know that I have the desire to want to leave a legacy. And that legacy is something that I think I need to live every single day. It's not just something that I'm going to leave behind when I'm gone. I've got to figure out what my responsibility is, and then I've got to step into that each and every single day, because I feel that weight, you know, and I want to fulfill that responsibility that I'm being asked to fulfill.
Man, so well said. That kind of sums it all up there. Bill, I, like I said, at the top of our conversation, I have so many things that I would love to ask you about. I may have to do this again just to get those questions answered. But if you would tell our listeners and our viewers where they can find more information about Bill Burke, how they can get the book, where they go, what to do.
Well, I can be connected with on LinkedIn or Instagram. LinkedIn on there, of course, just under my own name. Instagram is outside.the.arena. Love to connect there. My book is available in digital format or paperback on Amazon. Certainly welcome to get it there, but I've got a gift for your listeners. If they want a free copy, they just have to pay the shipping and handling, but you can go to outsidethearena.com/free book. Happy to get one out to you that way. But yeah, would love to hear some feedback or connect with any of your listeners. I think this is such a great medium. I think you're doing a great job just putting this message out and having an impact on people that have overcome challenges, which we all have in some degree, right?
Absolutely.
And so I love what you're doing and love the mission. And of course, I'm so grateful that you had me on.
Well, Bill, thank you for being on the show. Great conversation. So many, again, wonderful tools and ideas that are in your book. And I hope that people take advantage of that free book and go and get that, because it is, there are some amazing ideas in here that you can really extrapolate in and put into practice again in any walk of life. So just amazing stuff here. And again, thank you so much for your time. And I want to thank our viewers and our listeners again for tuning in for another episode of the Positive Persistence Podcast. If you guys like what you heard, please make sure that you give us a thumbs up and give us some comments. And as we always say, the goal is to stay positive, stay persistent, and remember, mindset is everything. We'll see you next time.